for taking part in this important research. My name is Rizal Barocha. I am a CI student. As a class project, I and my classmates are collecting the oral histories of those in Ventura County who are affected by the current economic recession. By signing the consent form that I have provided with you earlier, you have agreed to participate in this research and or have agreed to the audio recording of this interview to be archived at the CI Bloom Library. I would like to assure you that whenever you feel uncomfortable with the interview, you can take a break or you can decide to withdraw your participation in the interview.
Okay. So my name is Judith Dunklin. I am a CI student and I am a senior this year.
So I first wanted to ask you, what is your favorite, like, fondest childhood memory?
Wow. I think it's playing outside. As a little girl, I lived in Mexico until I was 7 years old. So my grandmother would finish cooking and she would let me go outside and I would play with my dolls. So I think that would be because of the innocence.
So you were born in Mexico?
No. I was born in El Paso, Texas, and I was carried over the border at between 2 to 3 days after I was born to Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua, because my mom was illegal.
Where did you grow up?
Well, like I mentioned before, I was born in El Paso. I was raised in Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua till I was 7 years old. Then I came to Los Angeles and I lived there in downtown area for about, 6 years. And then after that, we moved to Bell, California, where I lived till I was 18. And then I moved here to Oxnard at the age of 18.
The age of 18. That must have been really difficult to have moved around.
Yeah, kind of.
So when you were a child, did you ever experience any struggle on the part of your mother or parent or godparent? Did you ever notice that they had some struggles that maybe your other classmates didn't necessarily have?
Well, my mom stayed with me until I was 40 days old and then left me with my grandmother. So I was raised by my grandmother. My mom left and according to what they say, she came to provide us with a better life. And so she would send remittances, but those remittances were only sent until I was, I don't know, maybe 4. Mm-hmm. Because then my mom and my grandma got into a big fight because my mom got pregnant from my stepdad. And so My grandmother got really mad because she said, how can you leave this child and take care of another one? So there were challenges because at the beginning, let's back up a little. And my dad's white. He's English and Irish, and my mom's Mexican. So my mom and my dad met while my mom was working in El Paso, Texas, and my dad was at Fort Bliss. And this is an army base. In 1969, around November of 1969, they took my father to the Vietnam War. So my dad left and my mom wasn't able to tell him that she was pregnant. So my dad left and my mom thought that my dad left her. So I didn't meet my father. And in Texas, she couldn't give me my last name because you had to be married in that time. So for 23 years of my life, my last name was Palacios, which is my mom's maiden last name. And now my last name is Dunklin because at the age of 23, I looked for my father, told him everything. My father came down and said, you've got the wrong last name. and changed my last name to what it is it had to have been to begin with.
Going back to the beginning, when you were a child, did you ever have like the idea or this romanticism idea of what it would be like to live in America or what opportunities would be available to you? Did you ever have
a dream? I hated America. I was, I remember when we got here, I wanted to go home. I didn't like this place. It was a language that I didn't speak. It was, my dolls and my toys were left back in Juarez, so I wanted to go home. So that romanticism of America, no, it was Mexico. No, yeah.
So when you came over here, did you already speak the English language? How was it adjusting to having people having to make you speak English, basically?
No, I didn't speak English. My first language is Spanish. I remember I was in second grade because I passed first grade in Mexico. So I was in second grade. And there was a little girl that was sitting there, and she would taunt me. And she would sit there and call me the F word. And I didn't know. So I would look at her and I go, see, see. So, you know, I learned English. I want to say in between this and that, because I was an ESL student. Mm-hmm. So when they started teaching English, they would pull me out and teach me Spanish. How did that work? I don't know. But I know by the age of 9, I spoke English. I believe it has a lot to do with you being a child. And you capture everything so much faster.
It's like a sponge.
Yeah. So I don't remember when it started. I just remember by the age of 9, I was able to have a conversation. So.
So you said that you had arrived in Ventura County at the age of...
18.
Mm-hmm. Did you immediately go into a four-year university? When did you decide you wanted to go back to university or go into university?
Well, I graduated, and then I started junior college. Mm-hmm. And then I got pregnant, and so I stopped. And I had my kids. I came back, but I didn't come back to a four-year. I went back to a two-year because I didn't think I was ready for a four-year. So I did the two-year, and I was one class away from a business degree in AA. And liberal arts and science in business. And then I figured out that I didn't want to do business. And I did a 360. And I graduated in 2008 with the liberal arts and science. And I continued going to school in 2010. I graduated again with a psychology degree.
That's a lot. So when you were going through the community college, how were you able to pay for that?
Financial aid.
Financial aid covered a lot of it?
Well, junior colleges are totally different from university. When you go to a junior college, there is something called a fee waiver, especially if you have children, and which I do. And I got the fee waiver, which is called a BOG. And here in Ventura County, if you have certain needs and you need a fee waiver, they will waive that fee. And the way that I got my books was actually I would ask my uncle to front me the money until financial aid would pay me my check, and then I'd pay him back for that money.
Oh, that must have been helpful to have someone there for you when you needed it. When you were going to community college and you were raising your family, and you were married?
No.
And you were married?
I was divorced.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, no, actually, it was a good thing. I think if I wouldn't have gotten divorced and wouldn't have gotten out of that marriage, I think I wouldn't be here because it held me down.
Yeah.
No. So, no, it's a good thing.
Okay. Well, I'm glad for you that you got out of it. I understand. You're a butterfly that's in a cage and you need to be set free.
Yeah.
So during that time when you were raising your kids and also going to university, did you hold a job? Was it part-time?
Junior college or university?
Junior college.
Junior college, I held a full-time job, and I pulled 9 units every semester.
Wow, that's a lot.
And took care of my kids on the weekends, because I left my kids. When I got divorced, I found out I had cancer, so I had to take care of myself before I could take care of mine. So I stepped back, and I had a full hysterectomy done. Mm-hmm. Then I started college, and he kept the kids so that I wouldn't have to figure out somehow to take care of them. So he had them during the week, mm-hmm. and I had them during the weekend.
Mm-hmm. And when you had found out you had cancer, did you find a way to pay for it? I know that cancer treatment's pretty expensive.
No, because I had insurance. Mm-hmm. So because I was an administrative supervisor, so I was making $18 an hour. Oh. So I knew that I had everything covered. So my insurance. And since they weren't going to play around with it, they were just going to take it out.
Yeah.
I got my uterus taken out, and all I had to pay for was my co-payment and whatever was the deductible. And mm-hmm. then they paid for the rest. So I didn't, thank God I had that insurance, and I didn't have to worry about it.
When you were going through... because you seemed like you were in community college... getting a lot of degrees, like basically stacking them up. Mm-hmm. Did you experience any stress that came along with possibly holding that many units while being full-time and being a parent?
Well, it depends on the stress, and it's hard to answer because the way that I've always done things is that I don't think about what I'm getting myself into until after the fact. Yeah. I mean, I did cry a couple of times and say, I'm leaving. I'm not going to do this anymore. And then I would look at my kids and say, yeah, I can't. I have to finish. I have to finish what I started. So in that regards, yeah, but no, not really. All I set my eyes on was I wanted a bachelor's degree, and there wasn't any other way that I could do it but just keep pushing. You know, I mean, I would, one of the times I remember I was working 12 hours, and it was just, okay, so I started at 7 and I just need to be at school by this time. I don't care. I wouldn't have lunch. I had my lunch on the side to try and, like, minimize the hours so that I could get to school, because I needed to be at school by 6. So it didn't matter. It was just, let me get to school. Let me get to school. And my boss would ask me, well, you need to do this or you need to do that. And I would tell him, yeah, there's no problem, just as long as you let me get out 15 minutes before so I can get to class. And that was my whole thing. I just needed to get to class and then, you know, figure out as things went by. But the thing that happened was that my kids started growing up and they started going to high school. And I had promised that as soon as they hit high school, they could come live with me. Mm-hmm. So I started getting them one by one by one. So now it was school, or it was work, school, and then having to get home to cook something and then do my homework.
So you did it all, and
yeah.
So who do you feel helped you the most, or did you feel like you had a lot of help from a certain person that had carried you through, or
let's
inspired you to stay in the track you were going in?
Yeah, well, I'm asexual. Mm-hmm. So I figured that one out after, why am I having such problems with my relationships? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, because I don't like this and I don't like that. And I found out that I'm more about the person. So I have, at that point, I had a girlfriend, mm-hmm. which actually now is my wife.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And she has been there the whole time, and she's the one that just sits there. And I yell and holler and scream because I have to let off something. And then she'll look at me and she'll say, are you done now? Okay, let's finish your homework. You know, it's just that reassuring, oh, okay, I can yell and scream and holler and maybe get into a ball and cry and say, okay, now I'm done. Now I gotta finish my paper.
So you're always very motivated with everything. You seem like you're a very motivated person. Do you feel like you got that from someone? Growing up,
well,
did you just learn for yourself?
No, I think it's more inherited than grabbing it from somebody. I think I really think that the person is actually born with most of their qualities, mm-hmm. but I think that the qualities start developing as the person grows, because my mom isn't like that. And there is certain people in my family, but every single time that I tend to, oh, okay, well, I got it from this person, it just, my dad will do something. And then I'm like, oh, God, I'm my father's daughter. Because my dad was in the Army, and he's a retired master sergeant in the Army, but he's also an engineer. So, you know, I think you are born and you inherit a lot from your parents, even if you weren't raised with them. You know, you can have twins and you can have people that have never met their biological parents, and they will be almost identical in the way they behave.
So how has your life changed with you being able to multitask all these different situations? How do you feel like that has changed and molded your character for today?
Well, I think my character and the multitasking is thanks to my previous boss, because he was the one that would sit there, because, you know, as when you're young, you tend to play and you're like, oh, I'm not going to work today, I feel sick. He would tell me, and he would like reiterate it. If you have a job and if you have something to do, it shouldn't fall on anybody else. It's your responsibility. You're the one that said you were going to do this. So why is it that it isn't done? And I had 7 years of that, because I was an administrative supervisor for 7 years for the same company. Mm-hmm. So him being on me, it just builds that character. It has to be in you, but somehow it's brought out. Because I'm a stickler for certain things, and I don't like tardiness. If you're going to tell me you're going to be in a spot at a certain time, you better be there. Because if not, all hell breaks loose. My kids know that. I tend to run a tight ship. I'm not home. I stay at the university a lot because I carry 21 units this semester.
With extracurriculars.
With a lot of extracurriculars, yeah. But my phone, I text them. Where are you? What are you doing? And if I don't get an answer, I will leave them the nastiest voicemail. It's like, you know, I don't spend this amount of money for you not to be answering me. If you decide that you don't want to answer me, that's perfectly fine. By the time I get home, you will not have a phone. You will not have a phone. You will not be able to tell me that you're going anywhere. And you are grounded. And I'm not playing. So the kids have learned, and they'll answer me. They'll tell me, or they'll tell me before they do it, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go there. So I think that builds character. And like I said, me, it was my boss.
Let's go to when you started the university. Did you start your four-year university track here in Channel Islands? How did that come about?
My four-year, well, I graduated from Oxnard College. Mm-hmm. And then I transferred here after I got my psychology degree. my AA. So I have a liberal arts in psychology. So I had finished all of my lower division, and I came here to finish my upper division. So I came in 2010. Yeah. And I carried 15 units.
And today
I carried 21.
That's a lot.
but I'm not doing psychology. I'm done. I finished psychology last semester, which was fall of 2012. There you go. I'm gone. Yeah.
It's okay. So you mentioned that the financial aid system for the 2-year college and 4-year is different. How mm-hmm. did you?
Well, the financial aid for university, you get a certain amount plus things get added to it. I believe you get about $5,500, and then there's certain things that get added onto it. But because I'm not working for these past 3 years that I've been going to school, I've pulled out loans to subsidize the money to be able to carry these 15, 21 units and still have Mecha and still do internships mm-hmm. so that I can finish the university on time, kind of, because I ended up carrying a double major instead of a single.
So I don't know if you mind me asking exactly how much money did you take out in loans?
About $30,000.
And does that worry you?
No.
For the future?
No.
Do you feel like this is an investment for later in life, and how do you want to?
Well, I figured I finished paying off my car. I had a payment on a Montero that I have. And I figured the money that I was paying there after school's done and everything, I can pay that. But it's also going to probably, well, hopefully, it's going to get deferred again because I'm thinking of going to grad school. So they defer all your payments until you're done. Yeah.
So do you advise people to invest in their education, and like, how did you go about deciding that you wanted it so much, this education, that you were willing to take out loans? That, I mean, it's quite a lot of loans. I mean, it's probably less than what some people have, but it's a lot.
Well, it is a lot, but you're actually, if you look at it, it's like sitting down and waiting for a fortune to come your way. Because in the long run, yeah, I'll pay $30,000 or maybe more because I'm going to take out more loans to go to grad school. But that investment, okay, that is going to create my future life. That is going to allow me to move to Vegas, to have the 5-bedroom house that I want, to have the cars that I want. I think I've always had the idea that I was going to finish school. I just kind of got diverted and had kids first. And because my grandmother always taught us education's first. No matter what you do, education was first. My uncle has a bachelor's in business. So there was no reason for me not to get a bachelor's. There is no reason for me not to want to get a master's. There's no reason why you can't continue your education. The only reason that you would have is if you fall completely ill and there's nothing that you can do. Because everything can be achieved. You just have to want it.
So are you happy with the example you'd set for your children? That, I mean, you have so many degrees and you do so much. It's like you're super mom. Are you happy with what you have done so far?
No.
No?
No.
Not yet?
No, because the more you do, the more you want, right? I mean, I hope that I set the right example. I hope that they listen. And I hope that they see what's going on. I have two sons that are in college already. Mm-hmm. One of them is going to be an electrical engineer. And so he's already in his second year of junior college. And so he's going the route that I did. He's going through the junior college. And, you know, he knows that now financial aid is only 6 years. So he knows that he has to hurry up and do what he needs to do. My other son is probably, and he's a case. He's a basket case. He went to art. He wanted to be an art major because he wanted to open a tattoo parlor. Now he tells me that he wants to do culinary. So, I mean, as long as he's in school and he's learning and he'll find his way, I don't put him down for it. And then I also have an older son that will never be able to do any of this because he's schizophrenic. So I said it, and it's up to them. But I guess I won't be happy till I see the results. Because as it is now, the results are still not there. I have a senior in high school and a little girl that is in junior high. So we'll see. We'll see.
So we all know that the economic recession does not only affect the economic part of your life. Have there been some hardships in your life due to the recession in your
personal life? In 2010 I got laid off, and the funny part about everything is that I got laid off in April on a Thursday, and on that Saturday I got my admittance letter from Channel Islands saying that I was accepted. So it was like, whoa, you know, you get laid off and now this. For the first 2 years, I ran my unemployment and my unemployment as much as I could and as much as it would go so that I could continue going to school, because you can't just turn around and go up to another deadbeat job. The economy is so bad right now that people are losing their jobs right and left. And if you're not prepared, there's going to come somebody that has a degree and you're going to be out again. And so I decided, well, I got laid off for a reason. I got my acceptance letter for a reason. So let's do this. And it ran out exactly about a year ago. And so I turned around to my wife and I said, okay, now what? And she goes, well, child support. So you just go to the next best thing and try to figure out where you're going to get money. I mean, I went from making $800 a week to making $600 a month. Okay? I was the type of person that I would have all these things going and then I would say, oh, I think I have extra money. I guess I was wrong, right? If I would have had the mentality that I have now, things wouldn't be as tight as they are. But I thought, oh, well, you know, my job's always going to be there. So we have $800. Let's go to Vegas. So I'd take off on a whim to Vegas. I would take off on a whim to Tijuana just to eat tacos. And now, I mean, we are budgeted. And it's sad, but I guess in a way, if you look at it positively, the kids are learning from it. Because they'll say, not that they're kids, but they're kids to me. They're almost grown
they'll
teenagers,
always be your
exactly.
Kids.
So, I mean, they get to learn that, oh, well, mom doesn't have money today. So we're going to have to figure out how to do it. Like right now, my son's going to prom and I'm trying to scrape those $125. It's going to be $250 for tickets.
That's a lot.
You know? So you do what you can.
So you mentioned that you became on a budget. Did you, while on that budget, learn that, you know, it's budgeting is everything, and it's something that many people don't learn in high school, or something that should be taught? Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, they should, you know how they had, or I don't know if they still have them, but back in the day when I went to high school, they would have home ec classes, and they would make you carry a baby so that you knew how it felt to carry a baby, and the damn baby would cry and the chaperone would fall off. And you know, and then afterwards, I remember my sons had eggs as babies, and they couldn't crack it and they couldn't break it. And it wasn't a hard-boiled egg, okay? It was an egg, and it had a mom and a dad. I think instead of that, I think they should actually put the kids on a budget for a week, for 2 weeks, and make that experiment and show them how much money they really spend on going out, the movies. I want a paleta. I want, you know, because, exactly. Because I think America is very spoiled. Very, very highly spoiled. This weekend I went, and it's a perfect example. This weekend I went downtown LA with my Mecha Club. We went to buy the Cinco de Mayo things. And as we're walking, you know, there's three kids, and I call them kids because they're younger than me. They're in their 20s, and well, I'm 42. So my wife was with me, and she's 30. So, you know, we're older. We've been around. And so we're walking, and it's kind of like Mexico where they have, like, the things on both sides of this, of one side of the street, but on both sides, like up against the fence and almost on the edge of the sidewalk. And you're walking in the middle of it. So we're walking and we're halfway down the street, mind you, okay? And this guy yells from across the street, "The city's coming, the city's coming." I see people grabbing things and running because the city's gonna throw them away. We're talking about food. Things they were selling, anything that's on the street in LA and that doesn't have a license, the city comes and they throw it away. So you see these people and you see the face and the anguish and the pain, and I'm trying to get these kids to run, and they're clueless. So you get to the other side of the street, and we turn around and they're still running because the city's coming, like, little by little, grabbing tables, grabbing food, throwing it away. And we see this little kid, he might have been 10 years old, and he's running with his father's stuff, trying to run into a parking lot so that they can close the gate so that the city can't get to it. And the people that were with us were like, "Oh my God." And I just turned around and I said, "Yeah, have you ever seen this before?" And they said, "No, we didn't have a clue." That is the privilege that America has. That is the privilege that half of the kids have. The kids in the suburbs that do not see this day in and day out. I've seen this before. I was raised down there. To me, it was just another day, but it hurt because I have kids, and now it's looking at them and saying, shit, some of those people are going to come home and they're going to say, "Sorry, there's no food today." So if there was classes implemented on showing these kids, maybe our economy wouldn't be so bad.
So do you feel like your experiences in America and when you were talking about the young men, how they don't have any clue about how people actually live, and there's some people who go home hungry. Uh-huh. Do you ever sort of kind of resent them, or do you feel maybe some type of wanting to help or wanting to make them understand? Because it's, I understand that it's, sometimes it's...
I try to teach my children, because that's as far as I can go. I try to teach my children that, I mean, it's okay if you leave food on the plate. I mean, you can't finish everything, but also think before you serve yourself, that, you know, that could go to somebody else. Thank God I have enough that they'll eat it. You know, my boys are 6'1", 6'2", 250 pounds. These boys are heavy and they're big. Okay. But they do know the value of it. They do understand, because I have taken them down there. I have taught them that nothing is to be taken for granted, because at any point in time, it's going to go. I also sometimes help some of my boys' friends. So I'll have extra boys and I'll cook a little bit extra for them. And I try to show them also, you know, even though sometimes they teach me, because they're street kids. So I'm taking in street kids on top of everything else. But it is a learning curve, and they do appreciate a little more.
Did you find it difficult coping with everything, with all of your classes and having a relationship and having to balance everything? Did you find some type of coping mechanism, some outlet to help you?
Yeah, I breathe. I'm a psychologist at heart. I have breathing techniques. The first couple of semesters, per se, were not that bad. Because, I mean, 18 units, it sounds horrible, but it is not. It's copable. I mean, you know, I'm not working, so I can cope with it. This semester has been really, really hard. I had a death in the family. My son's graduating. My daughter's graduating. I have 21 units. I have a and within those 21 units, I have a capstone, a directive study, and then I'm interning. So this semester, I believe for the past 2-3 weeks, I haven't gone to sleep till like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I do feel like I want to sleep. I want to go to sleep. So instead, what I do is I back away. Like, my daughter will go to her dad's or whatever. My wife will be somewhere else. I lock the bedroom and I just meditate. And my focus is, now we only have one more month. One more month and I'm done. One more month and I'm done. And then it's the reward. You're going to get that degree. You're going to get that title you've worked so hard for. And, well, with me, it's 2. So I'm going to get my bachelor's in arts for both Chicano studies and psychology. So it will be better. But also, with my internship, it's a learning experience, because I'm learning from the indigenous population. But yeah. You have to find some kind of outlet, whether it be playing, shooting. Let's say you go to a shooting bar and you shoot. You got to get that stress out. I breathe. I lock myself in my room and I don't let anybody bother me for half an hour. My time, my space. And then I just zone out, breathe, come back, and okay, now we're ready to go. You know, some people are internal, some people are external, some people party. I breathe.
Do you have any suggestions for possibly people who are going through this difficult time during the recession?
I think it's know what you want. Focus on something or someone that can get you the goal that you're looking for. Whether it be school, work, let's say you're looking for a promotion, Budgeting. You got a recession going on. Budget as much as possible. I mean, if you bought this, you could say, I'm going to buy fast food. Well, no, because that's a little more expensive. Make food at home. Ration it. Instead of buying the big steaks, let's say you buy little pieces of meat and make tacos. Or if you're going to buy big chickens, buy pechuga, shred it. Make it last more. You know, there is no harm in finding entertainment. There's parks, there's beaches, hiking, you know, things that you don't have to pay for. And always keep your eye on a goal. I finished this goal, I accomplished it, next. I accomplished that, next. We thrive, we as humans thrive when we are challenged. If you don't challenge yourself, then you're never going to accomplish anything, and you're never going to be able to survive a recession, survive any kind of hits that life throws at you. You just got to roll with the punches and continue. And that would be the only thing.
Do you have any closing comments or anything that you feel like was an important time in your life that helped you, or maybe something that had happened during the recession that really affected you?
Losing my job was really hard. It was to go from being so important to nothing. I think it was the biggest blow. Even though, you know, the company closed and I closed it. I was the last one to leave. I was still getting paid by my employer, but it was that security. It was like a security blanket that was ripped from underneath and that you weren't prepared for. And I mean, even though I had an AA in liberal arts and sciences, it was still, what am I going to do with this? Where am I going with all this? So that was, I think, one of the most important, because till this day, sometimes I'm just like, oh my God, I was so important to that company. And all of a sudden, it's gone. You know, that was a hard hit. But I think what made me continue and do what I do and who I am is that I wasn't going to let it just make me, you know, fall. I cried, I yelled, I screamed, and then, okay, let's roll, let's go. Now what? What's next? Because there's always a next. You can't give up. If you give up, then that's where you have all your suicides and all the problems, because they give up.
So, are you hopeful for the future?
I am. I'm very hopeful for the future. I'm graduating. I'm going to have 2 degrees. I'm going to go out into the world. And I'm going to find me a crappy job just for a little while. And then I'm going to go back to grad school. My wife has an AA in liberal arts and sciences. She's going back to junior college for one semester. And then she's jumping here. And then she's going to major in Chicano studies and minor in psychology, and because she wanted to be a professor. So piggyback both back and forth, and I'm giving it about 5 years. 5 years, and we're out of here. We're off to Vegas. Hopefully, you know, it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. We can budget better. You don't need the weather, really. The only way that you would need a weather is, like, for example, if you're going totally drastic and it's gloomy and you're going to be depressed, then that doesn't work. So we're going to Vegas. It's hotter, but you got to roll the windows down, jump in the pool. We're going to be in air-conditioned buildings. We're going to be professionals. What do you want? It doesn't work. So you got to live in a place where you know you can make it. So yeah, I'm hopeful.
You're hopeful for the future.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Do you have any closing statements?
Nope, that'd be it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.